Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It is your home for free speech. So go to the website. It's like the website of free speech. And there aren't very many websites of free speech. They're all getting shut down. They're getting censored. They're getting DOS attacked, or whatever it's called, DOS, denial of service attacks. So you have to support RBN so that we can defend ourselves against DOS attacks and then keeping free speech alive. All right, that's republicbroadcasting.org. You know the routine. And then also download the GoCertified app. It's totally awesome. It's everything that you want to be, which is non-kosher certified. All right, well, today we are entering, I guess, the second week of whatever this is, the Ukraine crisis or World War III or whatever. And I'm not going to promise that we're going to have the latest news on Ukraine or the latest news on anything. That's not what this show is about. This show is about analyzing what's going on, thinking, you know, trying to pick out what's important. And one thing that is important, because we've got Russia, and if you've heard my recent shows, you know my whole line is that Vladimir Putin was pushed and pushed and pushed, and finally he had to draw a line, because if he got pushed too far, it really would be World War III. But he was pushed and pushed and pushed. Finally, he's drawing a line. We'll have to see how it goes. But one thing that is extremely important is the response of China. And that's extremely important. In fact, it's critical. So let's talk to Cato about that. Cato, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Slattery. Yeah, just another day here in the American wasteland. And just doing our part to inform people and warn people about the dangers of World War III. And just the dangers that the American Empire poses to the entire world. In regards to this, because, I mean, this conflict, this Russian attack, so-called attack that we see, is the fault of the United States. It's America's fault for causing the attack on Ukraine. And that goes all the way back to 2014, when the U.S. State Department, under the Jewish Victoria Nuland, bragged about staging a coup, a very violent coup, that toppled a democratically elected government that was more or less friendly toward Russia, and installation of this tyrannical, Russophobic, and just a Western puppet government that basically not only do they do everything the West wants, but they are actually engaged in a genocide against ethnic Russians. One of the first things that they did was they banned the Russian language from being spoken. And that's why Russia, unfortunately, is in a position where it has to attack to save itself, you know, to protect itself, and also to protect the ethnic Russians and ultimately the Ukrainians in Ukraine. And it's unfortunate, but that was the choices that Russia was left to. Either Russia is itself threatened by NATO, or Russia strikes first before they become a part of NATO.
And just a few clarifications. So the government that was overthrown by Victoria Nuland's coup, the so-called Maidan Revolution, it wasn't necessarily pro-Russian or friendly to Russia, but it wasn't hostile to Russia. And it had recently had Russia, and when I say recently, it had in the year or so before the coup, had Russia and the EU engage in a bidding war for a trade deal. And Russia won the bidding war. Russia offered better terms for a trade deal. So there's that. The government, the president, Viktor Yanukovych, who had been elected, and as I recall, the election was a 2010 election where he was elected, and he was elected with the support of the Russian minority and enough of the Ukrainian majority that he won. And of course, 6 years prior to that, there had been an election which he had originally been judged to have won, but then you had a different what was it called, the Orange Revolution, which overturned that result. But at any rate, he really represents the ethnic Russians plus a ethnic Ukrainians who aren't hostile to Russia. And, you know, you had basically Ukraine had been split between two groups or two regions, really, a south and east of the country that had a lot of Russian ethnic Russians, but also Ukrainians who were had a similar Orthodox faith and were more or less favorable to Russia. And then a west, which had a is Ukrainian speaking and has a intent to belong to kind of a Ukrainian Catholic faith. And they're more pro-Europe, pro-EU. And that there was kind of a balance of power between the two. The other thing I want to clarify is really it goes back not just to 2014, but it goes back to the
fall
what I call the dismemberment of the Soviet Union, but the breaking up of the Soviet Union, and even 2 years prior to that, the 1989 fall of the Berlin Wall, because in the aftermath of the fall of the Berlin Wall, you had an East Germany that was no longer communist and thus no longer had a reason to exist separately from West Germany. West Germany was already a NATO state, and there was a deal struck. I don't want to go into too many details, but there was a deal struck between President Gorbachev and President Bush, the first Bush, that East Germany would be allowed to be incorporated into West Germany, which is officially known as the German Federal Republic, or Federal Republic of Germany, FRG, and the United Germany would remain in NATO. In exchange, NATO would not expand any further to the east. That was betrayed. So you had these betrayals throughout the 1990s, even before Putin took over. And then after Putin took over, you had, continual betrayals in terms of the enlargement of NATO. And then you had the Orange Revolution, which was a George Soros. I mean, it was a color revolution, one of the prototypical color revolutions, where you had this, Western / Jewish meddling, if you will, into Ukrainian politics. And then finally in 2014. And then there's some other things you can throw in there too. The second President Bush withdrew from the anti-ballistic missile treaty, and so there are other rollbacks. The United States, the whole time during this period we're talking about, you had the United States doing all this military actions in areas that formerly they would not have. Like in the Middle East, you had the invasion of Iraq, not once but twice, the invasion of Afghanistan. You had the overthrowing of Muammar Gaddafi, overthrowing and assassination through a, I guess it was, what do you call those things, a bayonet up the rear end, very gruesome. The civil war in Syria, just a long list. And then plus, finally, before I kick it back to you, you also had the Americans and NATO in the aftermath of 9/11 and the Afghan invasion. President Putin did not object to them establishing bases in former Soviet republics in Central Asia in order to carry out this this mission. He, at the time, early on, President Putin thought that maybe Russia would be able to join NATO, that NATO would become kind of like a world police force or something, but Clinton and Bush were clear that no, NATO is going to remain an anti-Russian military alliance. So he's pushed and pushed and pushed.
The purpose of NATO is to basically serve the interests of American hegemony and American unipolarism. I mean, pretty much all these other European, and Canada, all these other Western nations that are part of NATO are subject to the United States. It's primarily the United States that is the one that is in control of NATO. NATO, the United States, sees Russia as a threat to their hegemony and their unipolarism. So that's why Russia could not join NATO, whereas Western countries aren't.
And so NATO is controlled by the United States. The United States is controlled by Jewish elite, a powerful Jewish elite.
Exactly. So,
and that just needs to be underscored. All right, and you mentioned the unipolar, unipolar world. We want to explore that later in the show.
Yeah, that was what the Jewish neocon, who's deceased, Charles Krautheimer, coined the unipolar moment. I believe that's
did
where
he coined the unipolar moment.
Yeah, I think that's where the term comes from.
Yeah, Charles Krauthammer, columnist for the New York Times.
Yeah,
who's passed away about 10 years ago, but he was crippled from a car accident. He was actually, I think, a quadriplegic, not a paraplegic, but a quadriplegic. Somebody who had been, I think, a lawyer, maybe even somebody who was in medical school too. Maybe he was a lawyer and a doctor. He was a smart guy, but he was an awful neocon.
He was a Jewish neocon and looked like Frankenstein.
He did look like Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Anyway, so before getting to the unipolar moment, unless you have something else you want to add.
Well, there's a good article on Sputnik, if you can access it, because the United States federal government has launched a war on freedom of speech and freedom of information, and now the RT website is down, and Sputnik may be down also, but there's a good article on there called The Height of Hypocrisy. Russia criticized, but how many times has NATO acted without approval? And it goes through an entire list of all the different incidents that NATO just, you know, violated the sovereignty of other nations.
And was it... This was a list issued by the Chinese Foreign Ministry. Was that it?
That was another one too. That was a different one. But this is an article on Sputnik, and it goes, okay, number one is Yugoslavia in 1999, Iraq in 2003, the Pakistan border attack in 2011, Libya in 2011. That was where the most horrific, evil, gruesome death of President Gaddafi. Libya,
which is on video.
It's like I even the worst possible, like the biggest scumbag in the world, I don't wish that upon them. I mean, just how evil and gruesome that was.
Do you remember Hillary Clinton's reaction to it?
Yeah, she laughed. She said, "We came, we saw he died," and then started laughing just like an evil witch, just an evil demon she is.
She was in the middle of being interviewed by somebody like a BBC News or something. It was a sit-down interview, and then she was interrupted. It was her girlfriend, actually, Anthony Weiner's so-called wife. What was her name? She's like a Pakistani lady with an enormous nose, but not altogether unattractive. And she was pregnant at the time. What was her name? She was Hillary Clinton's top aide, and everybody said lesbian girlfriend. At any rate, if you look for Anthony Weiner's wife, you'll find the name. I just can't remember it off the top of my head. At any rate, she walked up with cell phone and showed Hillary Clinton. And so, you know, the ABC News or whatever news crew it was filming it. And you could see Hillary Clinton look at the footage and then laugh and then cackle, "We came, we saw, he died."
And then, yeah, just broke out into this.
Yeah.
Evil cat.
And let's and then think of that every time you see a bumper sticker saying "I'm with her."
Yeah, I'm with that evil witch that laughs at a good man, you know, Gaddafi getting the worst horrific death of all time.
Yeah, and you know, no matter what you think of Gaddafi, I mean, he had his good points and bad points. However you want to assess it overall. Thing is, he had, after having seen what happened to Saddam Hussein, who was hung by the, American-occupied Iraqi government, it was like the end of December or the beginning of January 2000, it was either end of 2006, beginning of 2007, it's right around New Year's. And having seen that, Gaddafi then made a quick deal with the empire. And said, "Look, you can come in. You can expect all my chemical weapons facilities. I'll give everything up." And he did. And there's even like 2009 when Barack Obama was president, and he had just become president. They shook hands at the United Nations. So you know, they shake hands at the United Nations in 2009, and then 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years later, they killed him.
Obama orders him assassinated. Yeah. 2 years later, they killed him. What kind of lesson? What kind of message does that show? What kind of message did that send to Kim Jong Un, by the way?
Don't trust the evil empire, the United States of America, the American Empire. Don't not to be trusted.
Them. You disarm, and they will come, and they will see, and you will die. That's the message. But getting back to because we'll get into the like the unipolar moment and its aftermath later in the show. But I want to ask a few specific questions about what's going on in Ukraine with regards to China. So one thing is many countries and non-countries, many individuals are coming out and they're condemning Russia. What's the Chinese Foreign Ministry's official stance on what's going on in Ukraine?
China will respect the what is written in the United Nations Treaty about sovereignty and the sovereignty of both Russia and Ukraine, and China will not go along with the West in terms of sanctioning Russia and speaking out against Russia. China will simply watch and observe, you know, from a neutral perspective in terms of the conflict, what's going on, provide humanitarian aid where necessary to both sides, and China will still continue to have its good constructive relation with Russia. That's China's official stance. And China
didn't either the foreign minister or a spokesman speak of understanding Vladimir Putin's position, that he had been pushed into this? Wasn't there some sort of language like that?
I think one of them said something, yes, about that this was
that the Americans were ignoring his legitimate security concerns. Wasn't it something in that those words?
It was the United States that pushed Russia into doing it.
That they were ignoring his legitimate security concerns.
Mm-hmm. And that the United States has no basis to judge and to judge Russia on this. This is also another statement from the Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi. Here's what he said. He says that China does not support the use of sanctions to solve problems, and even more so opposes unilateral sanctions that have no basis in international law. It's been long proven that sanctions not only fail to solve existing problems, but create new ones, resulting in lose-lose effects on the economy and interfering in the process of political settlement. It's absolutely right. Spot on.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you know, yeah, you sanction Russia. Well, which nations are the most dependent on Russia for, you know, energy? Europe. So who's going to lose? Is Europe that's going to lose? Because Russia can just, you know, Russia or can just turn east and trade with China and Eurasia. So... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, the One Belt One Road initiative of infrastructure projects, that goes both ways, and with that infrastructure in place, then Russia will be able to trade that much easier, not just only with China, but with say Southeast Asia, with Korea, with Japan. So it goes both ways.
Mm-hmm.
There was something else I wanted to ask about, and one of the specific sanctions that is, it seems, it is going to go through is kicking off at least, maybe not all Russian banks, but many or some Russian banks out of this SWIFT system. The SWIFT system, which I guess has been around for probably almost around half a century or so, and it is a system of international settlements between banks. So it allows, say, a bank in Russia to send or receive funds from a bank in Germany or America or, you know, Japan, or the Japanese bank. They settle with American banks. They settle with Italian banks. And I don't think it's particularly high tech because it's been around for a long time, but it does have a near monopoly on this type of financial activity. And so there could be at least some short-term repercussions from this. But because this type of sanction has been talked about for a while, I think it's been at least a year or two that the Russians and the Chinese in particular have been developing or looking into the development of an alternative financial settlement system. Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite. Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
I've been developing or trying, looking into the development of an alternative financial settlement system. Do you have any updates on that?
Mm-hmm. Well, the good news is in the past few years, there's always been a solution to all the problems caused by the American empire. And this is one of them. There's this article from AsiaTimes.com. China's swift alternative may undercut U.S. sanctions. China's cross-border international payment system could give Russia a lifeline and accelerate de-dollarization. Washington News sanctions against Russia were no match for Biden's rhetoric, leaving out the most obvious measure that the United States might take to hurt Moscow, namely exclusion from the SWIFT international payment system. Banks conduct virtually all hard currency transactions via SWIFT or the Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunication. But a new Chinese alternative might allow Russia to conduct most of its trade in yuan rather than dollars. China's cross-border international payment system, CIPS, founded in 2015, is still under development and includes only 80 foreign banks. But there is no reason in principle that CIPS can't substitute for SWIFT. And if Russia successfully shifts its trade payments out of the dollar system, the blow to American prestige and power would be enormous. De-dollarization of trade is under debate in Western Europe. Germany's manager wrote in February 14, exclusion from the international payment system SWIFT is considered the sharpest sword that the West could wield as an economic sanction against Russia. However, it is a double-edged sword. The economic consequences would not only be serious in Russia, but also in Western Europe. In addition, the decoupling of Russia and China from the U.S. dollar would be accelerated. Both countries are already working on competing payment systems. And then let's see here. It says China's yuan has advantages and disadvantages as a dollar substitute. It has gained about 8% against the dollar since the COVID recession began in early 2020. So basically, it's saying here that China's already developing this alternative that's going to it will potentially destroy the U.S. dollar hegemony over the whole world. Then there's this other article too I found in LinkedIn. This is published by some firm. It's called iBlockchain Bank and Trust Technologies Company. It says the death of SWIFT and U.S. dollar hegemony. There is a discontinuity between the old man in the White House, dementia, and the self-suicide of the European Union. If the reports are accurate, the Davos gang fired the Sarajevo shot of the 21st century on February 27, 2022. They have removed Russia from the SWIFT system, even in a limited way. There are many complicated and consequential effects. Much of it has to do with the anxiety over the U.S. dollar's status as the global reserve currency. Using this nuclear option, blocking Russia and imposing SWIFT sanctions will be the first domino that bolsters China and Russia-backed alternative digital payment systems. Moreover, such sanctions will drive emerging markets toward blockchain-based strategies and reduce the global reliance on the dollar-centric international monetary system in the medium and long run. Altogether, SWIFT sanctions will very well incite the de-dollarization of the world economy. So, what they're saying is that, with the U.S. sanctioning Russia and kicking them off of SWIFT, this is actually going to backfire in the long run against the U.S. because it's just going to mean that the U.S. dollar is going to become less powerful because now Russia have an alternative to go to, and that's China. And China's currency, the yuan, the renminbi, is the biggest challenger of the U.S. dollar and U.S. dollar hegemony.
Okay, so this is all really, really important and very, very interesting. There are two points I want to make. One is sanctions. So sanctions were used against Iraq, for instance, in the 1990s, and it caused, Iraq was unable to get chemicals for water purification, the chlorine used in water purification. And as a result of diseases, in particular diarrhea, a half million Iraqi children or a million Iraqi children during the 1990s died prematurely. I can't remember whether it's a half million or a million, but I do remember another on-camera interview, Leslie Stahl asking Madeleine Albright about that, saying, a million children have died in Iraq due to these sanctions. Do you think it's worth it? And Madeleine Albright paused for maybe a second or two to think about it, thought about it, and says, yes, we think it's worth it. So sanctions can be crippling and deadly against small countries who don't have the means of substituting. North Korea's had famine in the 1990s because of a combination of sanctions and the loss of the Soviet Union as a trading partner. So for smaller countries, this can be devastating. But the experience over the past, 14 years or so with Russia, with the sanctions against Russia, especially since 2014, the experience has been that it's made Russia stronger because Russia does have the means to develop substitutes, and they're better off having developed the substitutes. So, for instance, up until 2014, the Russian economic model was exporting raw goods, in particular energy. They were kind of like a frozen Saudi Arabia. They exported a lot of energy and then bought things that, 20 or 30 years earlier, they manufactured themselves, albeit in maybe at low quality, but blue jeans or cheese or just consumer products. And
you are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Maybe at low quality, but blue jeans or cheese or just, you know, just consumer products. And that they just let those industries fall by the wayside and, you know, just use their oil revenue and gas revenue to purchase goods from overseas, from Europe and overseas. But when the sanctions came and they had to conserve their hard currency and whatnot, the strategy is called import substitution. So it's not as if they're developing, you know, cheese and clothing industries so that they can export the goods and make money. No, they're developing them so that they can not use their hard currency on imports. So they're substituting the imports that they used to be getting. And that's made the Russian economy much more diverse and strong. The other thing is you hear from Tucker Carlson and a lot of other people, a lot of hand-wringing over the prospect that the dollar will no longer be the world's reserve currency. But I don't think that's something that we should worry about, because think of what the United States has done during the era that the dollar is the world's reserve currency. They've been able to run enormous budget deficits, trade deficits. They print all this money. There's demand for dollars, and they've used it in order to finance a whole bunch of wars, that are of no interest to the American people, who run, you know, to have like social spending that is really of no interest to the American people. But in particular, just think of the wars.
It is better if we were reined in.
Why would you want, when we've got an elite that is hostile to us, it's hostile to the American population, why do you want that elite to have a blank checkbook?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, why would we want to give them free rein over the entire world? And yeah, the U.S. dollar collapsing and the U.S. dollar no longer being the world's reserve currency, that's a good thing. That's a really good thing that you know, all of us dissidents and then the whole world should celebrate. Because, I mean, what is the U.S. dollar? It's a Federal Reserve note backed by fiat currency. It's backed by nothing. It just comes out of thin air. And it's like, do you want a currency that's backed by that's printed out of thin air to be the reserve currency? Or do you want a currency that's more stable, that's actually backed by something like China's renminbi?
Yeah. Or, you know, what's going to emerge is probably not just going to be simply the renminbi. I hear people saying, oh, they want to become the world reserve currency. But when you look at it, the renminbi, the yuan, has been pegged to the dollar. It hasn't floated. Or if it's floating, you could call it kind of like a dirty float. But for the most part, it's been pegged to the dollar. And that's not typically the way you become a you know, reserve currency. The main reserve currency is the dollar, but if you look at foreign currency reserves, the reserves held by various banks around the central banks in particular around the world, it's mostly dollars. There's trailing pretty far behind is the euro, then the Japanese yen, then the British pound, and there's a little bit of Swiss franc in there. I'm not sure where the renminbi even comes in. So it's not as if this is something that, if they've been striving for it, it's been in a very, very unusual way. And we are better off with not a single reserve currency, but if we're to remain on this system. I mean, the gold bugs, the Ron Paul people want everything to go back to gold. Okay, that's one way. Because you can't just print gold. Gold was, to the extent it was printed in stars billions of years ago, right? You're not making new gold atoms. So that kind of takes power away from bankers to just print the stuff. But, you know, otherwise, if we were to maintain a system that includes fiat currencies, national currencies, it's much better to have the reserve status spread out among, you know, half dozen or more currencies without anyone dominating. Mm-hmm. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, just exactly what China says, a multipolar world, no hegemony. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, and you can have a multifaceted currency system.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. And that is also a very good segue into the next and perhaps last topic of conversation that I wanted to focus on today was the fundamental change in the structure of international relations in the world that is ongoing, I think that in a very few years people are going to look back, in particular at this event in Ukraine, the same way we're looking back at either the fall of the Berlin Wall or the breakup of the Soviet Union. Two events that were actually about 27 months apart, but we tend to think of them as one event. But what you had, you know, 32 years ago with those two events was a move from a bipolar world that, you know, international relations, balance of power, people had been writing about that, a bipolar world. You know, you can look at people like Kenneth Waltz in particular writing a lot about that, this kind of structural realism. You had a bipolar world, two superpowers, the United States and the Soviet Union, with massive nuclear arsenals, and there was a balance of power in the world between these two superpowers. And that had been going on since basically the end of World War II. So for 45 years or so, you had that was the structure of the of the world, of international relations. This is a bipolar world. Before that, before World War II, you had kind of a multipolar world. There you had balancing and, shifting alliances and whatnot. What you've had since the breakup of the Soviet Union is what Charles Krauthammer called the unipolar world, or the unipolar moment. Well, it was a moment that wound up lasting for about, 33 years or so, where the United States had completely free reign. And I'm going to underscore, the Jewish-dominated United States had completely free reign and did whatever they want. And that is coming to an end. And is that something we should mourn or not? And before I kick it over to you, I just want to remind everybody what went on during that period of time where the United States was the world's lone superpower. What went on? Well, you had a number of wars for Israel, which we talked about already. What else went on during that period of time? You had an increase in the attack on the founding stock of this country, the white Christian population. You had massive immigration, big increase in immigration. You had the big increase in promotion of homosexuality. You had gay marriage. Now you have trannyism. You have a huge ramping up of the propaganda war on white people. So go into any American museum nowadays, if you go into the Smithsonian or any museum of history, American history, where once you would have seen positive portrayals of the settlement of the United States, now everything is negative. Everything, any history museum that is sponsored either by the federal government or any kind of public institution, it is all the history of white people being mean to everybody else. So, I mean, this is the massive transformation that you've had during the period of America as the world's only superpower. Why would we want to try to preserve that, America as the world's only superpower? What good did we get out of it? So I kick it back to you, Cato.
Yeah, that's the thing. Basically, the fullest expression of Jewish power in those, 20 to 30 years, or some would call it the empire of chaos. That's what the American empire is. It's the empire of chaos. It's internally self-loathing, yet externally dangerous to the whole world, because it wants to impose that self-loathing and degeneracy upon the whole world, in addition to itself, or a.k.a. a blob. So, yeah, 1990 to 2010, really 2015, that was the epitome of the U.S. empire and its unipolarism and hegemony over the entire world. And we are seeing that coming to an end, and we should rejoice. We as Americans inside should rejoice, because that would mean the end of the Jewish domination over the entire world, the Jewish threat over the entire world. But at the same time, though, this is the question that is still yet to be seen. Is the U.S. empire going to go, because we know it's going to go down. We know it's going to collapse. It's a matter of how. And the question that still remains to be seen is it going to go down kicking and screaming and drag the whole world down with it?
Drag the whole world down with it, kind of Samson option style, right?
Yeah, the Samson option style, or as the professor of nuclear politics, Peter Kuznick, said, we've seen empires fall in the past, but we've never seen an empire with the capability to take down the entire world with it, and that's the United States. Mm-hmm. So is that going to be the option, or is it going to collapse? Is it going to be a controlled demolition, so to speak, to where, when you look at a lot of these demolition projects where they detonate, demolish, skyscrapers and high-rise buildings, they have to control the demolition so it doesn't spread everywhere. And hint to 9/11, by the way, but they have to control that demolition so it doesn't spread everywhere. So the demolition of the American empire, when it does explode, and it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, is it going to explode on everyone's face? Is it going to explode on the whole world and take down the whole world? Or is it going to be a controlled demolition? And I think our role as dissidents, whatever dissidents we are, whether we're nationalists, ethno-nationalists, or just, people opposed to the federal government tyranny, or whatever dissidents we are in the United States, our goal right now is to make sure that when the American Empire collapses, it doesn't explode on the entire world, but rather it's controlled and it only happens eternally. Yeah, it's going to suck. We're probably going to live through hard times, but it's, you know, if the whole world goes down with it, then there is no future. There is no hope. Whereas if the whole world, you know, still lives on as the U.S. implodes, then the whole world can help the U.S. rebuild for the better.
Yeah, that's yeah, exactly correct. There's something else I want to bring up, and this, you know, this also relates to the changing paradigm of the, is that the right term, of international relations. So we're moving in probably back into a multipolar world with the United States will probably still have a lot of power, and then Russia and China, and an alliance between Russia and China balancing the United States. And maybe some people want to look at the EU as another power. The way the EU has worked so far is, for the most part, as just an extension of American power. Most of the EU countries are incorporated into NATO, which is thoroughly dominated by the United States. And plus, and this needs to be underscored, just as when we talk about the United States, we have to remember it is a Jewish-dominated United States. The EU is really a Jewish-dominated EU. And before some people jump in and say, oh, yeah, but Russia's dominated by Jews, it's not. The level of Jewish power is much lower. It's, the difference is great enough that the existence of a Russia with relatively less Jewish power is a massive irritant, it's something that Jews like Victoria Nuland and company, you know, mainstream political Jews in the United States just can't tolerate. And then, of course, China is even less dominated by Jews, you know, regardless of what people say about Israel Epstein or, you know, a couple of individuals had pictures taken with Mao or whatever. Anyway, we're going into this new multipolar world, which I think we should welcome. One thing that I want to underscore is that in the pre-World War I or World War II world, that multipolar world, ideology really didn't play much of a part. You know, maybe around World War I, people like Woodrow Wilson were saying, well, it's democracies against autocracies or something like that. But really, it didn't matter. I mean, in World War I, the British and the French didn't care that the Russian Empire was more or less an autarky or autocracy. But in the Cold War era, ideology played a huge role, and for the Soviet Union in particular, because it was founded on an ideological basis and not on a ethnic basis, not even on a geographic basis. Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, I remember one of my professors pointing out in the 1980s that it was the only country on earth that did not have a proper name, a proper noun in the name. There was no geographic term, there was no national term, there was no, like, Saudi Arabia. I mean, Saudi is a family. There was no proper noun in the name. The Union of Soviet simply means committee, socialist republics. It was all common nouns. So there was no connection, at least in the name, to any place or any group of people. And it was based on ideology. And it was very important for them to export their ideology and their system. Their system being economic system of central planning and state ownership of the means of production. And they did this. And, you know, the United States, maybe prior to that, there was a certain ideological element to American foreign policy. Maybe there was something about democracy. But it was much more pragmatic. But during the Cold War, and I think it was really a response to Soviet ideology, that the United States started more and more emphasizing, if not in practice, at least in principle, democracy and capitalism. Now,
liberal democracy.
You could make the argument, and I think you'd probably agree with it, that at after the end of the Cold War, to the extent that the United States was emphasizing ideology, it was values. And what are the values of the American Empire after after the end of the Cold War?
Liberal degeneracy. Liberal global homo degeneracy. That's what the values of the American Empire are.
Yeah. And so, I mean, flying gay rights, or the rainbow flag everywhere, flying Black Lives Matter flags from their own embassies. You know, what were even before...
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast 2-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Black Owl Coffee, and I started Black Owl because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back, to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
So, I mean, flying gay rights, or the rainbow flag everywhere, flying Black Lives Matter flag from their own embassies. You know, what were even before Maidan and the annexation of Crimea by Russia in 2014. Remember, sanctions actually were going into effect in 2013. And what were they about? At least some of them were about a bill that had passed the Russian Duma, the parliament, stating that homosexuality could not be promoted to children. And that was one of the basis for the sanctions, even before the annexation of Crimea. So, you know, this is our values. When you hear Chlamydia Harris talk about the values that define us as a nation, what values is she talking about?
Yeah, what values and what nation? What nation?
Yeah, what values and what nation? Is it your nation? You RBN listener out there, is it your nation that is defined by her values? Are you a member of that nation?
the anal flag. That's the flag of the American Empire. The one with the, what is it, the tranny one with the pink and the blue and that disgusting.
Yeah, that's the worst.
That's
the worst. Rainbow. At least a rainbow looks nice. But when they put that other that triangle, and what's a triangle, like a pink triangle, what's that supposed to represent?
I don't even know.
I'll tell you what it is. So in the Third Reich, the Jews who identify themselves wore yellow stars. The gays were made to wear, at least in some instances, pink triangles. So that's what that's supposed to represent.
Oh.
And so they have, you know, a kind of multicolored but centered around the color pink triangle on the left side of the rainbow flag, and that's really the new flag that's emerging. Anyway, this has been a really fun and interesting discussion. Do you have any last words of wisdom or information for us?
Well, all I could say is, down with the American Empire. Long live the new multipolar world. We should welcome the multipolar world with open arms. And one last thing, Taiwan is not Ukraine.
Oh, yeah, we never even got to that. Well, that means we have one more thing to talk about next week. We'll look forward to that. Taiwan is not Ukraine. Okay, well, thank you very much for joining me today, Cato.
Thank you, Dr. Slattery, and safe travels.
Hey, I tell you one thing. Let's just squeeze in real quick one last question. Do you think that short of the, and this is a question, you just answer it however you think, short of a declaration of independence by Taiwan or, you know, something like a third world war, a much broader war than we're seeing today, what do you think the odds are that China would just unilaterally annex Taiwan?
Well, that's a very good question, and that will probably take a whole show to answer.
All right. All right. So that'll be our show. Unless you have a short answer, that'll be the show for next week.
Mm-hmm. Well, all I could say is China knows what they're doing more than anyone else from outside. So.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Extendivite 7 herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio. Only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.